Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News. And during the COVID pandemic, we've all experienced an increase in virtual interactions, whether that's meetings, doctor's appointments, learning sessions, even this podcast. And whether we want to admit it or not, most of us have spaced out from time to time during a Zoom call. That was happening with students at the University of North Texas, where nearly 8,000 courses were converted from in-person to remote at the onset of the pandemic. And our guests for this episode worked with faculty to establish best practices for learning in a virtual environment to keep students engaged. And it worked. It worked so well that the Dallas Cowboys reached out to Dr. Adam Fine, UNT's Vice President for Digital Strategy and Innovation, and Assistant Vice President, Dr. Rudy Thompson, for guidance on how to keep their football players engaged in virtual meetings. And while there are many factors to the Cowboys' turnaround from last year's losing record to this year's division championship, Coach Mike McCarthy recently gave Dr. Fine and Dr. Thompson credit for their help in making the team's coaching staff more effective this season. Adam Fine, Rudy Thompson, welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I think it would help to set the table for our listeners just to share the partnership, Adam, that you have built with the Cowboys, because that's the first thing is, how the heck did this come together?
That's a great question. Our my boss, our wonderful president, Simatrix, had these conversations in place when I arrived, and I've been part of the team almost since I got here to bring it to fruition. At the core of our partnership is a joint master's MBA in Sport Entertainment Management, which just finished its first year. It has a fully online option and an in-person or blended option, so partly in-person, partly online. It's been very successful in its first year. We have a wonderful partnership with our College of Business, where this is home, the Ryan College of Business. The Dean Wiley is a wonderful partner to us, and Bob Hare and others have done a wonderful job bringing it to life. But what's neat about it, obviously, and what's cool for the students is not only are they getting all the best research, the best in theoretical approaches to this discipline, but get to learn the practical side from folks who work, employees of the Dallas Cowboys and other sport entertainment entities all across DFW. So that's at the core of the partnership. We also do some other neat things together too, but it's been a fantastic partnership. They are a great organization to work with, very organized.
Well, knowing a little bit about pro football, having worked, actually I worked with Mike McCarthy, the head coach. He was the offensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints when I worked for the Saints, believe it or not. We worked together for about 3 years. But yeah. I know that Mike would not be involved in that classroom stuff that you talk about. So how did you get connected with the head coach to help the team perform better?
That's a great question. So I think Coach McCarthy, as you mentioned in the press conference, collectively as a team, and I'm not sure if it was him or just together as a coaching staff, they were pretty well aware that this was not something they were successful with last season, that it was a problem that coaches brought up, saying we're struggling communicating this information in a setting we're not used to. And so we got an email from associate head coach Rob Davis and asking, hey, does anybody know who can help us? We got a great partnership with you. We know UNT is a wonderful research institution. You must have some faculty who know a thing or two about this. And, interestingly enough, it's almost a perfect match for my area of research. And honestly, I couldn't do it without Rudy. Rudy's got decades of experience in teaching and learning and in science and understanding how to teach effectively, both in person, blended, and online. She's obviously my right hand in many of the things that we've been able to accomplish at UNT in these first 2.5-3 years. So I called Rudy up and said, let's do this. And we responded pretty quickly that in a couple of weeks from then, the only thing we really were waiting on was the right time. It was in April, so still, I think Rudy and I at least received our first vaccinations, and even upon arrival had to go through some, a quick COVID test and strict measures, which we were appreciative of, actually.
And those NFL protocols, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you can see now how important that is once again now with Omicron. But that's how it came about. So it was an email from associate head coach Rob Davis, who was just a pleasure to work with. He was super nice, was very clear about what they were looking for, which helped Rooney and I prepare, a pretty solid hour for them.
You know what? What I loved about this story when I first read it in our paper by Michael Gelkin just after Christmas, and I don't have a lot of familiarity with how NFL teams prepare or how they get ready for what happens on the field. I'm a casual fan at best, but as you read this story, you realize, okay, clearly there is a lot of analytical work and a lot of study and a lot of schooling and even scholarship that goes into just prepping for what you're going to do on the field next Sunday. And the disconnect here, as I understood the story, was it was just hard to teach. It was hard to do what you guys try to do at UNT in the classroom, what I do when I teach journalism. You got a group of people that you're trying to get information to, and you're not doing it effectively because, frankly, it's hard to communicate in this format that we're all in right now. So tell me what you guys did. Break this down. What were the steps that the Cowboys needed to take?
Go ahead, Rudy, start.
Okay. The first step was building the atmosphere for the learning period, right? So instead of having, saying we're going to be, on WebEx for the next 5 hours, talking to them about and chunking out periods of time and sort of setting the stage for what's going to happen. And great technique that is well researched in the field is telling them up front that there'll be expectations for their participation and giving them ideas about what that's going to be about. And that physically makes people lean forward versus lean back, right? So, and we even saw this with the coaches. Even as we were talking, we would see them lean forward. So it's creating the atmosphere, and it's also acknowledging what's going on right now, saying, we know it's tough. We know that you've got friends and family who are sick. So doing a check-in and acknowledging the difficult time that we're all in, but then saying, hey, as a team, we're going to come together and we're going to focus on this time. And then together, we're going to figure out the best way to install this particular defense or this particular play. So those were our first steps. And those are more on but less on the football side and more on the human side.
Yeah, that's how we got started and went on and basically had 10 steps. We wanted, that was something we talk a lot about. Talk a lot about that in the, good teaching strategies, the intersection of technology and pedagogy, keeping it simple. My team is sick of me talking about Chipotle-fying everything. I use Chipotle as an example a lot, just because you walk in that restaurant, it's rice, beans, meat, you're out. You can't, it's impossible to mess up. The UX, the user experience is good. It's easy, simple, clean. And we just don't, in my opinion, we haven't done enough of that in higher education. And so I'm pretty big on that. So is Rudy. And we've really tried to put that at the center of everything we do. So, for example, at the beginning of the pandemic, we created a website called teachanywhere.unt.edu. And the first thing we said to our team is, no matter what we do here, we want to keep it to the need to know stuff. And we're going to keep it simple. We're going to have blocks of stuff because, professors were in a bit of a panic. Many of them had experience, but many of them did not. And they were going to have that experience in just a few days. And that's scary. And it was scary for the students too. So we wanted to not add to their stress. We wanted to help them with their stress by keeping it super simple. So we tried to do the very same thing when we spoke with the Cowboys coaching staff. They've got a million things to think about. The draft was coming up in a couple weeks. And we want to keep it 10 easy steps. And I think that was part of what helped us with the successful knowledge transfer, which is what we're always trying to achieve here.
It seems like the inclination for most of us, for me, certainly, as I was going into online meetings and this new atmosphere that we're in, is to just sort of pretend like we're all in the room together. Mm-hmm. And it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly that is not an effective way to go about these meetings at all. So what are the mistakes we're making, and how do we correct those in our online engagement life?
You know, some of it is not atypical of a large lecture hall, where the, you know, to me, Zoom is similar to that. There could be hundreds of people out there listening to this, but are they learning, right? Am I making any connection? And that's a problem in large lecture halls. And so we don't really see a lot of difference between a lecture in a large lecture hall and a lecture on Zoom. Neither one of those is effective, right? There isn't enough engagement. There isn't enough of connection for the learner. So they could be off in, you know, la la land. They could be in Hawaii in their mind. They could be worrying about, you know, a sick family member. So just because I talk doesn't mean you learn. And so we use what we call formative assessment, which is a way of communicating and then having your learner communicate back to you in a different way that shows you that there was a transfer of knowledge, that shows you that there is understanding. And that's something we often don't do in Zoom. Like, I'll hear my colleagues, and, you know, there's memes out there, right? That was another Zoom meeting we could have done via email. So if it's just delivery of information, and there's not going to be an interactive component, reconsider your mode of delivery. If I am going to, you know, talk to you and I'm just have stuff to tell you, then do you really need to be there? Could I just send that, write that to you? Do you really need to be physically present? Or are we just making you be physically present so we can check off that box? So we try to encourage, and I try to encourage faculty here to make the live time the interactive time. The not live time, do the homework, right? Go read this article, come back with three salient points that you're willing to share out to the group. I don't need to watch you do that, right? And so the same thing with the Cowboys. Here's a play we need to install. Let's talk about it. Then we want you to go back and consider it. And then I want you to come back and I want you to tell me what you think this play is. What's your role in this play? When you do that and there's an expectation that I have to come back and speak, then I'm probably going to do that work. Now,
and a question, if I can jump in, because I'm yeah. curious, when they're teaching a play, what's the visual element? This is there a dry erase board in the background that the camera's catching, or are they doing something on screen? You know, are sharing your screen? You know how you do in a business meeting? How did they do that?
A little bit of both. Now, we did work with their technology group, and help them figure out way they knew how to block things out, but how to make it available to coaches so that coaches could have specific clips and be able to draw on the screen. WebEx has those technologies, obviously Zoom, but the Cowboys specifically use WebEx. And so I actually spoke to their technology group and had discussions with them about how you can make those things accessible to the coaches. And then, you know, as Adam describes, he's got feedback later on from one of the coaches that was really helpful for them. Yeah. Now, I give the credit to their technology group that was able to come together and say, hey, this is something that our coaches need. So let's figure out how to do that. We talked about breakout rooms. The way the Cowboys rooms are is the linemen, they have, it's just an open room. They could go into that room virtually at any time. There's not a start time or an end time, but we wanted to have breakout rooms. And so they worked to figure out a way to shut those off and open those and invite certain players to come in versus it just being like an open locker room and people just come in and sit and then there's going to be a delivery. Yeah. So the technology to kind of reframe and refocus to make sure that there would be an interactive component.
Yeah, I think And what we discovered, I mean, you know, we did a little bit of talking, but we wanted to leave plenty of time for discussion and, you know, get to their questions. And we discovered, you know, in some ways they were halfway there. Like I think in the Wall Street Journal article, it mentioned our interaction with Coach Moore, who came down right after and said, aha, you know, hey, I was doing videos. That makes sense. You know, because I understand, you know, multimodal learning. I understand the visual aspect is important here, especially when I can't reach out and grab the player and, you know, you move over here. But I see now that I was showing him 60, 70 minute clips, and that's a lot for the brain to handle. So I'm going to chunk these up into shorter clips and then engage with them, do exactly what Rudy's talking about, maybe break them out into smaller groups, have them feed back to me, teach each other. One of the most interesting things I think we learned, you know, you might guess, but, you know, unless you're inside a football club, you might not know exactly how it works, was, you know, they get the veterans get going on the plays earlier, particularly returning veterans. And then here comes the draft and boom, those new members of the team, they've got like 4 weeks to catch up to the veterans, and they're new. And so not only are they new and maybe new to the schemes, but they also don't have enough time. So they're already swimming anyway. And then you pile on what might be too much information too quickly, and you experience cognitive overload. And this is not uncommon in any teaching setting. And it sounds like it was a real issue, you know, for the Cowboys last year, and probably, you know, maybe before that too. And so you're not going to have success. The new players particularly are going to have, they're not going to learn the plays. They're not going to understand the context with which you're trying to teach those. So that was a really, I think, neat moment when Coach Moore realized, hey, I'm doing some of this right, but I got to take it a little further. I don't want to overwhelm. I'm going to chunk this up. I'm still going to do the videos, but now I can stop, pause, you know, use WebEx to draw some X and O's here, but most importantly, involve the players in the learning. So it's not just one way, it's two way. And that is, we just know that that's higher order learning.
Yep.
I wonder, Adam, how applicable was the work that you guys had been doing at UNT, you know, and I would think, you know, there's sometimes generational things, just like there are with football coaches and players, as there are with professors and students. Was it really an apples to apples type of thing, or was it a whole different ball of wax?
I think it was, Rudy and I came out of there, you know, not quite sure what the nuances would be. You know, again, I think, you know, Rudy said it nicely in one of the articles that we don't know football. I mean, we're both big fans. Rudy's a big Cowboys fan. I grew up on the Bears. I've been steeped in the Cowboys since I got here, and it's been pretty neat getting to know their organization. And they've been fantastic to watch this year particularly. But, you know, we just weren't sure, but after leaving there, listening to the questions the coaches have, I think our hypothesis was confirmed that it is quite similar. It was very close, apples to apples, a little bit different. You know, we're talking about meetings, but, you know, what's a class? In some sense, a meeting of sorts. Mm-hmm. And what you're trying to do, again, is impart knowledge. You're hoping knowledge transfer occurs. You know, like Rudy said before, you shouldn't be there just to hear yourself talk. That's why we're always preaching at UNT about experiential learning and active learning, rather than just the old sage on the stage lecture, because that we know from, you know, a century or more, really centuries, but certainly, you know, it's been elucidated in the past few decades. That's not the best way for knowledge transfer to occur. So I would say, pretty close to apples to apples. I don't know, Rudy, if you agree there.
Yeah, I think learner is a learner, right? You do communicate differently to adults than you do children. And so the way your delivery and maybe the examples you use. But when, you know, if you're trying to teach me about podcasting and that's not something I know anything about, I'm still a learner. And so what might work for one learner, you know, you might teach podcasting to Adam in a different way to me. I'm very much a visual learner. And so I've got to see it. I've got to work it out in my own mind. I've got to draw it. I've got to. And so, you know, with engagement, you find out what type of learner you have and it doesn't matter how old they are. That doesn't change the fact that they need to learn. It changes how you deliver the material. So one of the things that Adam and I really felt like was the same is most of the new recruits are just out of college. Well, we teach college. This isn't a huge age gap difference. And we're very secure in our understanding of the college learner. And we did. We walked out feeling like that they were very much the same in that, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And it sort of occurs to me, thinking about this and hearing you all discuss it, that I have felt like, by and large, online meetings have been relatively successful, or at least a valid replacement in a corporate environment or in, you know, even my newspaper environment where I'm interviewing people, because it's automatically engagement, right? It's set up for, I'm going to ask you a question and you're going to give me an answer, or I'm going to give you this, you know, brief presentation maybe, and then we're going to talk about it. Whereas when I look at my own children's experience in their online year, and then my discussions with educators about how K through 12 kids have done, it has been really unsuccessful by and large. I don't have data necessarily to support that, but anecdotally, really, really poor. And so I feel like you all are getting at what this difference might be, but I wonder if you can take us in a direction of what you have thought of the K through 12 online shift and what we got wrong, if we got a lot of it wrong, and what we can do better to improve this going forward.
I would love to. I was a high school teacher for a large number of years before I decided I wanted to help teachers be better teachers. So that's really what it comes down to, Rudy, is that you can have a great remote class if you have an instructor who has been trained on how to do a great remote class. We threw people into the situation through no fault of their own who had no experience and no knowledge. You can look at all of the research, and it is the efficacy of the instructor that affects the learning of the student. And so if you're in a remote setting, and I've never taught you in a remote setting, you don't know the behaviors, you don't know the parameters, I don't know the parameters, and I'm just lecturing to you in the same way I did when we were face-to-face, it's not going to work. I don't think anybody is surprised that it's not working. I think the surprise is when you find those pockets that worked really well, to take a look at what they did well, what the instructor did. You can go out there and you can see all kinds of instructors that figured out really cool ways. I'm also co-director of the Teach North Texas program. And what we do is we produce math and scientists who also have teaching certifications. So we give them the educational background, and we also give them 60 hours of practice in the field before they go into student teaching to become. Well, they were fantastic remote instructors because we were there to help them, teach them what they could do in that setting. But the average teacher doesn't have that, right? Yeah. So we had some faculty say that, well, now we all know how easy it is to teach online. No, you know how easy it is to deliver remotely, right? You know how easy it is to lecture to people that are sitting there the same way you lectured, but that's not necessarily teaching. And the evidence shows that it limits and is very, the opposite of learning. So you still have to have engagement, even in a remote setting. You still have to have that, you know, like if you look at some of the folks, they had paddles for the students and the students could, you know, put up answers on the paddles. They had tools that they could write. The students could write on the screen and I could write on the screen. You still have to keep it engaging for the learner.
Yeah, and I can speak to it just briefly from a standpoint of a father here with last year, an eighth grader and a sixth grader. Now I have a freshman and seventh grader here. And I watched it not be particularly successful. And this is in a pretty strong school district here in Flower Mound. The schools have been great. I think they certainly tried their best, but whereas in university setting, we probably, we were already adapting to this. I've been doing this in university settings for over 20 years. And while it's moved, it's distinctly moved from the periphery to the core, and it was headed in that direction, and it really was accelerated by the pandemic. We already had some infrastructure in place. In the case of UNT, we had a lot of infrastructure in place. And again, it's a credit to our president for even creating a division of digital strategy and innovation. So we had a year or so to really put some things in place and be prepared. It wasn't for our pandemic, but really helped us when we were in this position. But K-12, we know that's probably not the ideal scenario online for most kids, because there's a bunch of other things that need to happen as part of growing up and maturing that are better in a face-to-face setting. So they didn't put the infrastructure in place or didn't prepare as much. And maybe it's, you know, we could get into questions of funding and all that. So this was just a shock to the system, to K-12, as far as I can see. All my research is in higher education, so I won't claim to be an expert, but I have plenty of K-12 teachers or friends, and I watched it with my own children. But Rudy's also right. You know, at first, you know, of course, it was, you know, that the end of the spring 21 semester was, you know, people are just trying to survive. But as you got into fall 21 and, I guess that was the end of spring 20. As you got into fall 20 and into spring 21, you started to see some faculty who really understood, okay, my social presence in the online space is really important and impactful. Whether it's a 6-year-old or a 12-year-old or maybe even a high school senior, they need to see my presence, feel my presence. I need to be responsive to them. These are some of the things we know about best practices in online education, especially in these settings when you're now in different geographical locations. That might be down the street, might be across the world. And so I think K-12 is a lot better prepared for this now than they were, but the reason it didn't work, and I think it's fair to say overall it wasn't successful, is because Rudy's right. There just wasn't any training or infrastructure for this before the pandemic. I hope K-12 will now, and you know, federal and states will invest in this, because we're going to need it, whether or not it's a next wave of pandemic or it's just the way this next generation is learning. We're going to have to take the best of online, the best of digital, and combine it with the best of in-person, because they're still going to need that in-person. They must have that for becoming, you know, social adults and understanding what it's like to operate later on in college and in the work world. But there's no way digital education won't be a part of that. So I hope for the best going forward.
I think last thing,
go ahead.
But if that's okay, is like Adam was saying, we have a division and we had people who had experience in teaching online. In most K-12, they don't have either of those. So they've never done online ever, right? They've never even heard, you know, been a part of any kind of an online delivery. So all they were trying to do, and unfortunately some faculty did too, was take face-to-face and broadcast it, yeah. You know? And that's what doesn't work. If you can have, like Adam's saying, great online engaging present, and it works. I'm a firm believer too, that the hybrid model is the best model. The things that can be done on your own, do on your own. The things that need to be done together, do together. And whether that's physically or remotely, but it's, if you just try to take what you did, you know, in your K-12 classroom and then just now broadcast that via Zoom, it will not work.
No, I think that's right. And what I saw, what the experience that I had, again, as just a dad, was the best teachers were either intuitively or through some training, figuring out ways to do some of the things that you mentioned, which was not engagement of the sort that we might be accustomed to, which is, hey, little Johnny, what's the answer, right? Mm-hmm. It was more physical. It was more, you know, show me your paper or something like mm-hmm. that. I don't mean to criticize teachers when I say it wasn't successful, because the efforts that I witnessed both as a journalist and as a father were Herculean in many, many ways. They were doing everything they possibly could, but the medium just wasn't working, or the modes of engagement weren't working.
You don't know what you don't know.
Frustrating. Right.
We train teachers. Teachers spend 4 years. And so this is always why, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, I could teach. You know, I know the subject. No, that's not what teacher training is. Teacher training is how to deliver the content. It's not the knowledge of the content. You can Google that. Right. So we train them for 4 years on how to deliver in a face-to-face environment. They've received no training for how to deliver in an online environment. And yet, so I'm not criticizing them at all. I am in awe that as many of them stood in and did the best that they could. But how were they supposed to know how to do it? This is the same thing with the Cowboys. The Cowboys reached out for help because they didn't know how to do it. And luckily they're an organization that has connections, and we could go in and help them with that. And they also have WebEx, and they have a great technology team that can bring all of this together, and there's money. Well, K-12 doesn't have that. So this isn't a fault of the teachers or the principals or the administration. This was a whole new world, and they weren't prepared for it. And they had no training in how to do it. Students had never tried to learn that way. And so it was a survival mode, like Adam said. We're seeing the ramifications here at UNT. The seniors that are now our freshmen, they're struggling because of that remote instruction. But again, it's not the fault of the deliverers. It's that they were never given the instruction, the training, the experience to be able to do it well.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've got a couple of freshmen who get here and say, oh, this is online education, because what I saw last year, that was different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we always, you know, try to say, you know, okay, whatever high school you're coming from, it's like, hey, you know, we get it for sure. I'm sure they were trying their best. We have more resources for this now. I'm glad you're able to benefit from the digital learning you have, you know, you're experiencing at UNT, but resources matter.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we wrote a pretty strongly worded editorial actually earlier in the week that we're recording this about the decision of some districts to go back virtual and strongly urging them not to do so for K-12. And I feel strongly right now that kids need to be in their classrooms, but we're foolish if we don't believe, as you all just said, that this is going to be an integration into our education models as we move into the future. And I just can't imagine that we don't need to put the resources and the time and the learning into getting it right. And if the Cowboys get the press around that, great, you know, but if it actually trickles down to where your fifth grader is figuring out how to do the three R's, that's what we're really looking for. So I'm glad to know, I didn't really know the work was being done, but I'm glad to know it's being done. I'm glad to know it's being done here in North Texas. So thank you.
Absolutely. You know, I want them back in the classroom too, but I also want them to be safe. And so if there was a way to invest in getting teachers some training on how to do both, then you have the opportunity to maybe have some students come in on Tuesday, Thursday, and some people come in on Monday, Wednesday. And you're getting the interaction that you need for those things that need interaction. But then you're using technology for those things that don't. But, you know, you have to have training on how to be engaging when you're not looking at each other. Right. I would love to see a greater investment in K-12 in teachers and teaching them how to respond in these different types of scenarios.
And one of the things Rudy and I were excited about with some of the exposure of the story, hey, it's a neat story in and of itself. The Cowboys, wonderful to work with, asked the right questions. The players were learning. That's just kind of just awesome all the way around. But hoping that other people saw too, and as an encouragement that, you know, a learner is a learner. We can do this in many different settings if we are prepared, if we have the proper training, if we're not just forced into this. And and that it might encourage folks, K-12, higher ed, corporate training, whatever else, in multiple industries, really across all industries, that you know you can have a great online course or a terrible online course, just like you can have a great in-person course or a terrible in-person course. It takes work and training and preparation. And you know, I think as a society, we made some pretty big gains, but there's more work to be done.
Well, it's an interesting, as we kind of wind down our conversation here, I wanted to, you know, just talk about the pandemic as a whole. And, you know, we've had people like public health officials and epidemiologists on our podcast that, you know, this has been such an incredible time for them to use their knowledge, and you have to think there's going to be lasting impact. Well, for you guys, certainly, you know, Adam, we had talked prior to the pandemic about the future of education and what that looks like, and you had a focus on that. But as you mentioned, this accelerates everything. And I'm wondering, as we kind of wind down here, if you can each provide some perspective on what you think that means for the future. You know, how big of an impact, or bigger of an impact, do you think what you guys do is going to have for UNT students and faculty?
Well, I tell when we hire new staff members, one of my promises to them, as Rudy's well aware of, because I told it to her too, was, hey, you'll never be bored here. And boy, has that been true. Now, it was true before the pandemic, but it's certainly been even more so, you know, throughout the pandemic. And I think we've got a lot of work to do. It's kind of never ending as we learn how to grow and change as a society, and certainly in higher education, using digital tools and understanding the benefits of both worlds. And I think that's where I would, you know, the future is probably going to look like a really integrated, blended type of environment, that we do take the best of what we can do digitally and combine it with in-person. But I want to make this point too. Not everyone can afford or is in the situation to have the opportunity or the blessing to be in person. So something we were working on before the pandemic and is really important across educational equity is that we have fully online options too, because for many people, that is the option, whether you're talking about graduate school or lifelong learning or even finishing your bachelor's degree. You touched on that at the beginning of our conversation, Paul, with my younger sister getting to finish her degree after 15 years of being outside of college and doing other things in the music world. That was the only way she was going to get it. So we want to have great in-person options. We want to have, for those who can afford that and have the time for that, we want to have great fully online options, because that is the option for many people. And then we you know, most importantly, probably because we know, you know, from an empirical standpoint, this is probably optimal, we need to figure out how the two work together. And to me, that's higher education's number one job going forward in this decade and beyond. And that crosses all of it: student affairs, academic affairs, advancement, enrollment, digital strategy and innovation, diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have to understand how best to do that in both worlds.
Dr. Thompson, your perspective?
I think for me, I can say that prior to Adam coming and the development of the digital strategy and innovation, there were about, let's just say, about 50 online courses developed in a year. We now develop about 250 in a year. So, you know, part of that is directly driven from faculty who are really pressured by students, but they're starting to look at their content and seeing what is the best modality for the student to learn this content. That's what we want, right? Just because I'm standing in a room with you, or just because we're having a conversation, this may not be the best delivery. I might need a different, you know, we're trying to do that with classrooms too. We're trying to reconfigure. If you look at classrooms today, they resemble classrooms from 100 years ago. That's not good, right? I mean, we all know it's changed over these 100 years. So how do we reconfigure classrooms? The same way is, how do we rethink about our content and what's the best mode of delivery? What can I put on the student to learn on their own? What do they need me for? What can I facilitate for them? And you're going to see students take online courses and face-to-face courses. I am a scientist. I believe in labs. You need to do that. Yes, you could do a virtual lab. It's not the same. I've done those. If I'm going to be a lab scientist, I need to do lab science. But let's say that it is literature. Maybe there are parts of a literature class that are better for online. So think about the content and decide on the best modality for the learner to get that content, rather than this idea of I'm going to be online or I'm going to be face-to-face, right? So we talk to a lot of faculty and we look at their course and we go, you know, that isn't an ideal online course. Adam and I don't have this drive to move every course to online. It really is what's in the best interest of the student. What's the best to communicate that course, to get that content, and to provide that education for the student. We also look at open education resources, trying to reduce the impact. Well, driving to campus 5 days a week, right? That's a financial burden on students and on the environment. So this kind of combination of in-person and hybrid, and really focusing on what the content is and what you really want the students to know, understand, and be able to do, are the three questions you always ask. And then you pick the modality that works best for that.
Yeah, I will say you'd be surprised. One last thing. I will say you'd be surprised. We certainly don't want, you know, you don't just throw everything online. That's not a good strategy. But you would be surprised, when I left the University of Illinois, the number one, the most popular online course was a course in dance. I wouldn't think that would be the one that would pop right to your mind, because it's a very kinesthetic, activity. But it was a fascinating course, and you could slow movements down and watch videos and analyze them. So there's a lot of potential in the virtual space. But at the same time, we must be adapting the physical space to these new ways in 21st century learning. So it's a brave new world, and we're happy to be a part of it. We're thankful for it.
Well, we sure appreciate both of you spending time with us and sharing your perspectives. Thanks.
Thank you.
Audience, thank you for listening to our podcast. Feel free to email us at deepside@dallasnews.com with questions, comments, and ideas. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. We will talk to you soon.
The Deep Side of Dallas podcast is brought to you by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. The show is produced by Andrew Sherman.
If you like what you heard today, please follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also get our daily news roundup and special audio reports. And if you have questions, comments, or guest ideas, we want to hear from you. Just email us at deepside@dallasnews.com. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.